Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Lynn Cockrum Murphy. She is author of Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. As an infant, Lynn survived a tragic house fire that claimed her father and two sisters and left her with severe burns over much of her body. She lived most of her life with a severely depressed and alcoholic mother who shared with Lynn at 5 years old her thoughts of suicide. Lynn lived through her stepfather being crushed to death in a logging accident and her mother being murdered in a barroom robbery. After all she has been through, Lynn is radiantly happy and living a life of pure service to the world. She is here today with her new book, Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, an Amazon number one bestseller, talking about how she went from hopelessness to hope. This is the one woman you would want at your side when you're in such deep pain and chronic misery that you don't see a way out and can't understand why bad things keep happening to you. Today, Lynn is an intuitive consultant specializing in bringing guidance to those who seek assistance with their spiritual path, in addition to facilitating physical healing, emotional growth, and removing blocks to a life of joy. She has a doctorate in education, is a licensed substance abuse counselor, an Access Bars instructor, an advanced level theta healer, and course instructor. She teaches at Northern Arizona University and maintains a private practice in the Phoenix, Arizona area. For more information, you can visit her website, which is lynncockrum-murphy.com, or you can also visit desertjewel.org. And I do have direct links to those websites in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Lynn to the show. Good day, Lynn.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. Boy, anything I can do to bring people hope, I'm all for that.
Me too.
Yeah, great. Well, you know, I have to start, like I said in the introduction, I mean, you went through hell. I mean, you know, it's all of the experiences that you have had are just major, tragedy. So, I mean, can you tell the listeners first, why is it that you wrote such a personal book and kind of put it out there for everybody to consume?
I wrote it because there was like an inner pressure to tell the story. And on the other hand, there was, well, and then I think there also was the component of one more level of personal healing in writing that story and putting it out there. The other reason is the hope part, the steps to leaving suffering behind, and how I would like to offer tools and ideas to others that if, no matter what life dishes out, and it really can dish out a lot, how to get out of that. It's been, decades of a journey for me. And I would really like to see others be able to utilize some of what's in the book so that they get some of that peace.
Yeah. You know, it's the one thing, first of all, I constantly am in admiration and awe of someone like you who, writes a book about personal struggle because, first of all, I'm sure, there is that healing aspect, but, you could have done that and kept it to yourself, I mean, and you would have gone through that healing. But to put it out there and you know, as an author, I know that you're, you know, when you, you know, publish a book, you're constantly talking about it. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, here we go again, you know, we mm-hmm. gotta talk about this story. And so, you know, when you have such painful circumstances that you, you know, that you write about and are constantly talking about, does it get like easier? I mean, is that process of talking about it makes the healing stronger?
It actually has helped talking about it so much. It's funny because the very first interview I did with my writers group, so they asked me some personal questions about exactly what I went through in those first 25 years of life. And I started sobbing. And I was like, oh, no. And fortunately, it was a practice interview. But it was like, oh, no, I'm sobbing. And I have found since then that although sometimes I think, gosh, I'm feeling waves of emotion, it doesn't ever come down to the sobbing again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you can talk about the people that you love and the biggest events in your life without some feeling, and maybe that's a good thing too.
Yeah, it is. You know, part of, you know, when I was reading your book, part of the things that you kind of espouse, you know, when it comes to, you know, leaving the suffering behind is recognizing that emotion and not tucking it away, and, you know, in a way just kind of bringing it to light.
Well, that tucking it away is actually, I think, part of the dysfunctional system that I grew up in, where you just, what is that American saying about pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get going, and that kind of thing, and that actually it's much healthier to acknowledge that was traumatic, and it affected me in many ways, and I'm going to get help to understand it and to release it. Maybe just one of the attributes was survivor's guilt. You know, everyone in that house fire died but me. And so for years I felt badly about being this survivor. I can laugh about it today, but I couldn't laugh about it for a long time. And so seeing a therapist, and I did a lot of reading in psychology to understand what that was. And eventually it lessened, and certainly it isn't, a pain anymore.
Yeah, you know, the survivor's guilt, you know, I understand that for you it led to a path of, coping mechanisms, you know, kind of bringing in some of the coping mechanisms that people use to help deal with the pain of, and basically this is PTSD, correct?
Right.
Post-traumatic stress.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very much so. From the house fire, but then from so many other events after that, I did a little research on PTSD and found that there are 8 million Americans diagnosed with it. So, you know, it goes beyond our veterans, that, you know, we're aware that our veterans really have an issue with that. It also, the research said that multiple events make it more likely that you're going to develop PTSD. It affects women more than men. It happens if you've abused as a child, if you recently lost a loved one, if you were younger when the things happened, if you were poorly educated, and it occurs more often in African Americans and Hispanics. So it doesn't mean you can't thrive, but it means that you're going to have symptoms. It says also that PTSD occurs following a traumatic experience or the witnessing of a life-threatening event. So that could be a car accident. So we know there are a lot of people that experience PTSD and may or may not know what it is and what to do about it.
Yeah, that's the key too, is trying to identify it, and so much of it goes, you know, undiagnosed or unchecked. You know, one of the things that I was struck, now the house fire happened when you were 2 years old, and in the beginning chapters of your book, you talked about there, you know, because of the burns and that kind of thing, and but that basically there was a sense of loneliness, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of that was a in your book, you know, I mean, you describe that, but then you also indicate that that loneliness was a gift. In a way. So would you mind talking a little bit about that? Because, I mean, I think there are some people out there now who, I actually have one Facebook friend I know who a lot of times will send me messages about how lonely she is. And I'm just like, wow, you know, that, you know, but anyway, so would you mind talking a little bit about that sense that you had and why now from your perspective that it was a gift in hindsight?
The many traits that I developed because of the traumas that I had experienced and the dysfunction that I grew up with, loneliness was one of them, and it made me seek out what can I do about this and seek connection with human beings. So one of my favorite things to do is to have one of those conversations that just goes on and on and on with someone that you really like. And you connect deeply. Another is my family members, the ones that are still in my life, how much I enjoy connecting with them. So it was like ferreting out what works for me, what will ease this sense of loneliness. And the greatest one that I got is the connection with a source or creator, that which is greater than me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I became a meditator, and in connecting with that source, all the loneliness and all the other traits disappear. So in that connection through meditation, all my needs are met. So I think that the loneliness is part of what propelled me to ask, well, where am I going to get this taken care of? Even therapists couldn't, change that loneliness,
mm-hmm.
but I think my spiritual practice did.
Yeah, that was the one thing that kind of struck me too, is, you know, so often people, you know, look for the answers outside themselves, you know, from some expert or another, you know, when they just really need to spend a little bit of time looking inward, you know, and kind of, but for some people that's hard. Maybe there's, you know, a little bit of avoidance that, you know, not feeling comfortable at what they will see when they go inside.
Oh, I think that's true. I also used journaling as a way to be in touch with my deepest self. I also used autobiography, the writing about the events in my life. All of that's very healing. They're tools that I encourage people to use. I think some people are very self-reflective, and that would be more the type of person that I am. And if a person isn't, you certainly can practice being self-reflective. There are a lot of, when I teach for the university and I ask my students to reflect on their experiences, they get so much more out of them. It's a great tool. So you can look on the internet for some questions on self-reflection and then journal on them. So many tools. Not that difficult.
Yeah. But that's truly where, for each person, you're going to find the answers, you know, because we're all so unique in our own life experience. Yeah.
Yes, now, that is true.
Now, one of the things I thought it was interesting, you know, now I indicated that you're an intuitive consultant,
mm-hmm.
But when you were young, it was just a brief, quick sentence in your book about visiting blue angels, you know,
mm-hmm.
In your crib. Did you kind of always have this, you know, intuitive connection, or, you know, that particular type of, granted, you went through the whole research and all that kind of process, which seems to be logically based instead of intuitive, maybe not necessarily, but I mean, logically based. So did you always have that sense of connection to the ethereal?
I think that I did to quite an extent. And I think that I was very unaware of it, that it wasn't in the social norms of what's acceptable. It wasn't okay much in my family, although later on it became more so. So I really didn't. And when I first remembered that the two blue angels were at the foot of my crib in the hospital and talking with me at night, that it was like, this is ordinary, because it was just my experience, and at about 3 years old. And on the other hand, it was like, this is extraordinary. Angels visited me. How cool is that? But I think lots and lots and lots of people are intuitive, but we're not taught to accept it about ourselves, so we shut it down. Some people also, intuitives that have the gift of sight, and they'll turn it off. They'll close it down because it scares them, or they don't understand, or it worries them. So I think I have, I know I have it now, but I think I had it all along. I also think my mother had it, as I look back at her life and things that she did. So she died in April. No, she died in May. They bought that bar in March, and within 2 months it was robbed and she was killed. And she had our birthday presents put aside for us. She had our Christmas presents on layaway. She worked in a jewelry store. So she had these gifts all set up. So that year, just lessened the pain a little bit that there were gifts from her. Also, the last time I saw her, she wouldn't speak to me. I mean, she spoke to me. So she wouldn't say goodbye to me. And I had traveled from Oregon to Nevada to visit her. And she wouldn't acknowledge. Finally, I had to go get in the car and leave. My stepfather, who I was not friends with, really, walked me out to the car, and I thought, this is a very odd moment. And then I never saw her again. But now I see that she had a lot of awareness that this event was going to, unconscious awareness, I think, that the event was going to happen. And she did a lot to wrap, the other thing she did to wrap up her life was a month or two before she died, she gave my sister and me each the rings that our fathers had given her when she'd gotten married. So, because my sister's father was my first stepfather, and, of course, my father died when I was two. So she gave us those rings before she died, and I just thought, how sweet. She held on to this thing, gave it to me, and then later on I'm like, oh, my gosh, if she hadn't done that a few months ago, I wouldn't have known which ring was which and what was for whom. So, so that intuition is cool stuff.
It is, the thing that, you said that she may not have necessarily been conscious of it. I think, a lot of people do operate, with that intuitive sense, that gut feeling, and maybe just don't identify it as such. But but still, if they're in tune with it and they act on it, they seem to kind of, go with it, and it kind of strengthens as well.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, part of your book talks about, steps to leaving suffering behind. So if you wouldn't mind kind of, let's talk a little bit about suffering, does it have a purpose? And if it does, is it important to leave it behind? So let's talk a little bit about it. Does, in your opinion, does suffering have a purpose? And let's talk about maybe why we would want to leave it behind.
Okay. Suffering for me is a powerful motivator, that it kept pushing me to do something about my unhappiness, that I saw myself after all those events in my life, I saw myself very much as a victim and powerless to deal with life. And it was like I couldn't really stand having that kind of view. And those things don't change easily. So I think that suffering is purposeful, in that it can cause us to change direction. I mean, you put your hand on the stove, it burns, you move your hand. So if a person's in an abusive relationship, they can, on the sixth event, go, okay, enough pain. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm done with this. I will find a way. So that's how I see suffering. Now, Buddha talked about suffering as inevitable, as just part of life. It's going to happen, and the only way out is enlightenment. And I can see that's pretty viable, because the more years that I have spent in meditation and using the tools that I recommend in the book, that I don't suffer much at all anymore. And I can really see that all the suffering I do today is created pretty much by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of it is through thinking. I'm not having traumatic events in my life today, but mostly it's through my own thinking. Yeah, so I can get out of that. So maybe suffering really does have a purpose.
Yeah, well, okay. So, and I agree with you that, it can be a great motivator. I mean, whether someone takes action on the first time, sixth time, 20th time, whatever, but yeah, leave it at that. Now, in addition to that, I know several people who just love to suffer. I mean, it's like, and so, in just from your point of view, why, I mean, does this kind of seem to maybe give them purpose? I mean, what's your feeling about somebody who just seems to be in a constant state of suffering and doesn't move into that next step of taking action?
There seems to be a relationship between what we think that either what we deserve or what we find familiar. And we tend to repeat that. For some people, it is, because my mother was physically abused and verbally abused by my stepfather, the one that she bought the bar with. And I asked her about it once, and she said, no, it was her own fault, because she said things that provoked him. Well, I thought that was pretty lame, because any man worth his salt would deal with a woman who provokes him by either requiring marriage counseling or leaving or some other thing besides hitting. So that was a choice on her part to stay in the suffering, and I think she had been abused by one of her stepfathers, because her brothers had intervened and stopped the beating. So maybe she thought that's all she was worth, or that's how life is. And so it can be what is familiar, compared to, she had been a single parent before, and she didn't want that again. So maybe it was also easier for her to stay with the safe and the familiar, although it wasn't very safe. The familiar. So I think a lot of people are like that. And then we all go at our own rates, Sometimes a 19-year-old will say, absolutely not, I'm not having this, and will, leave the state. And sometimes a 67-year-old woman will say, okay, that's enough. I've endured decades, and I'm on my way now. So it is up to the individual whether they're fast or slow about it. I think the one truth, though, is nothing has to remain the same. Every decision that you make, every choice that you make, changes things. So if you choose different, your world will change.
Yeah, that's the one thing also too, as I was reading your book, that it was that that attention to making better choices, from this moment on, if you truly want, something different or changed and that kind of thing, then from this moment on, make a different choice, make a different decision, and take a different road. That's the way that change occurs. So, and just in about 5 minutes, we're going to take a real quick break, but I do want to invite people who are listening that if you would like to ask Lynn any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Lynn, feel free to type it in, and we will get to that right after the break. Now, Lynn, you a little while ago you mentioned Buddha, you know, and mm-hmm. so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about it. I understand reading your book that you joined a Buddhist sect when you were 17. So I would love to hear just kind of what led to that, and maybe what are some of the insights that you gained from that particular experience.
Well, my family had raised me Christian, and I'd been to a lot of different kinds of Christian churches, and they told me that, you know, your belief in Jesus and your belief in God, well, that's everything. And yet, then I saw them being pretty unhappy and drinking excessively. And so I thought, well, or even ones like my grandmother who didn't seem to drink, but she didn't seem all that happy. So I thought, what? And she didn't go to church. So what is it? You know, what else would work? Because that doesn't seem to work for them. And so I checked out Buddhism when I heard about it and found it very fascinating and different. And it didn't say I couldn't be a Christian. It said that you can also have this too. And within that, I learned about the law of cause and effect. And I think that was a powerful life changer. And I learned the tool of chanting, which also is powerful. The law of cause and effect changed my perspective from all of this is done to me to I have created my life and I get responsibility for everything in it. That's a hard concept to transition to. I even had a woman in my book club recently react to that because she had a family member who was pretty unhappy and she didn't want anybody... She didn't want that person to have responsibility for herself. She wanted to blame it on something else. And so I think take your time with those kinds of transitions. But the law of cause and effect is one of the foundations of how our universe works. It just is. So for me, it brought comfort and insight and, a change of mind, a change of perspective.
Yeah. You know, and in that cause and effect, you know, like I say, sometimes, you know, people may not want to recognize that that their life circumstances, they, you know, attracted that to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
With people who are sick or have a chronic disease or, you know, maybe are born with, you know, a particular challenge, be it mental or physical, when it comes time to putting into context that I created this, what would you tell someone who says, oh, my God, there's no way I would have done this to myself?
Really good question. So my aunt had polio and had a lot of hip and leg problems after that. And when I told her about my studies in Buddhism, she got really upset because she couldn't mm-hmm. see how she could have any responsibility for this life, this painful life that she'd created. And after she went and researched it, she was like, okay with it. So we never, her husband told me that, my uncle told me. So I don't know how it went down so well with her, but I think there's an example of how it is possible to be okay with that. On the other hand, when I look, I just realize that it's very difficult to see at first that you might have created your own condition for a reason. And I think we cannot make any assumptions about what the reasons are, because a person may choose a handicapping condition because it serves the family's karma, it serves their own karma, or it's a gift to teach someone else something else. It's a gift that someone else might take care of them and ease their own karma or create positive karma. So we can't just make assumptions. You have to look pretty deep. That's where the intuitive skill really is helpful, too. Also, I think we get messages in our dreams and meditations about these things. So, no, it's not a matter of blaming yourself. It's a matter of understanding the bigger picture.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's, you know, as I was, you know, reading the book and pondering, you know, that aspect. You know, it's I've, you know, one of the things that you know, actually, I'm gonna go ahead and I've got a wonderful listener, Corrine, who's in the chat room. One of the things that I'm doing now is I'm putting together a caregiver book, you know, and part of it, and it's the essence is going to be personal stories, people who are caregivers to, you know, it's going to give tribute to the individual for whom they cared, and then kind of some of their personal experiences as a caregiver. But the essence is going to be kind of keeping a focus on the spirit of the individual who received the care. And hers, you know, she has some wonderful insights, but, you know, ultimately one of them was the knowledge and the idea of, you know, really of what unconditional love is all about, in faith, you know, and that particular aspect, you know. And so, you know, and it, as I was reading your book, I kind of thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, those are some of the kinds of circumstances, you know, of that gift of knowing unconditional love, you know, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, in hindsight, you know, it looks like, okay, boy, you know, and actually, you know, for someone who's, you know, the receiver of the care, that's actually quite giving of them, really, you know, to be able to go through particular suffering with the knowledge that the caregiver is going to get this gift of knowing love.
That's such a wonderful thing, that level of unconditional love where we set ourselves up for these kinds of lives, that those people get something out of it, and it may not be apparent what's really going on the spiritual level until, you know, maybe much later. It also reminded me, it's funny, this one thought keeps wanting to escape my mind. It escaped again. I'll come back to it if I can remember what it was.
Okay. Well, you know what? This is a good time for a break then. we're just about halfway through the show. So I'm going to, again, take a quick 90-second break here. And again, if you'd like to call in and ask Lynn any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And again, for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to ask, feel free to type them in. And then, Lynn, now, if that comes back to you in that little 90-second time period, let's talk about that. If not, what I'd like to do is, one of the things that I think is one of the true gifts of your book is that you provide action steps and tools for people to help move through that. So when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk just about a few of them, just so that the listeners can get a good understanding of some of the wonderful gifts that you offer in that book in that regard, okay?
All righty. Sounds good.
Great. Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, added to that on the website, I do now have a brand new link to videos. We're going to be having video interviews, educational series. I have a couple of videos now of essential oils, and we're also going to be doing book reviews, so you can check that out too. But again, as my little spot there, I did recommend, I did say I appreciate is you supporting our guests. And again, today's special guest is Lynn Cockrum Murphy. We're talking about her book, Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. And I do appreciate it if you would support Lynn. You can visit her at her website, lynncockrum-murphy.com. Or you can also visit her other website, desertjewel.org. And I have direct links to both of those in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Lynn.
Hi, Robert, and thank you for encouraging your listeners to go to those sites. And the book is also available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so on.
Oh, absolutely. And you also, you also offer classes and intuitive counseling and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that you offer there and a blog. So, yeah, definitely a great resources between those two websites. So
I remembered what I couldn't say earlier.
Okay.
And that was that, because you asked about setting up these karmatic events in our lives. Mm-hmm. And how is it that we get into these? And I do think that part of the picture is that we don't remember what our plan was for our lifetime, and that is useful to have it set up that way, because I know most of those events in my first 25 years of life, I would have done anything to avoid. So I didn't realize, as I was alone with this person, and then what I experienced after that, or, being in my parents' house, I don't think I could have avoided that one. But most of them, we would avoid if we could. And so we have no conscious memory of the plan that we've set up for all the events in this life, and then we get stuff accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those, once we, make this plan to have this life existence and we come in here and, it's like, oh, okay, a lot of the whys and wherefores and whos are kind of, set to be laid out at the right and proper time, whenever that is. And a lot of times in hindsight, we will get to see them, the reasons why, and that's a good thing. I think then that helps us whenever we encounter any other kind of tragedy or challenging situation, just to keep in mind, that this is a passing, event, for us to look at, to grow from, and to be better as a result.
I think that's one of the really good concepts that became popular maybe 30 years ago, is that life is a school. It's a school. All these things that happen we're meant to learn and grow because of. And so any time that it threatens to shut us down and we recoil and isolate and withdraw, any time that we can counteract that with engaging life to the best of our ability is going to help us get more out of that. The schooling event.
Yeah. I have a book called Spirituality Bites. It's no secret, Spirituality Bites. And it's about, different kinds of things that I've learned from various guests. But one day I was thinking about the idea of lessons learned, and it struck me that, yes, we're here to, learn things, but I always didn't like that pass-fail idea of lessons in schools, because it's like, anyway, it was just probably just one of my things. But anyway, it was just, at that moment I thought, well, you know what? These are just awareness-generating circumstances, or events, awareness-generating events.
That's a good way to put it.
Yep, not that age has anything to do with it, but awareness-generating experiences. And, and whatever we do with awareness is, it's up to us. We have that free will. And so anyway, that's the kind of thing. But Speaking of schooling, and before we get to talking about tools, you know, you are an instructor at Northern Arizona. In the academia, do you have, when you're talking about, you know, specific situations or that kind of thing, do you bring in the intuitive aspect into your, you know, curriculum, I mean, into your teaching at all? And if so, how is it received? Or is it still one of those areas where maybe academia and, you know, for lack of a better word, metaphysics sometimes are better left separated?
I do not mix them.
Okay.
If I do, I don't do it publicly. A couple of the professors have noticed my book and asked me about it, and I know one of them read it, and they were very sweet in their responses, but it was on a personal level, not a professional level. And I think that, you know, everything in academia is research-based and best practices, and I think that that's appropriate for that setting. You know, my book is only research-based, based upon my life, my viewpoint, my experiences, and the things that I've studied. I think that they are effective, but I do not bring that into my work. I do use my intuition a little bit with my students to know, especially when they run into trouble, if it's if I should be, if it tough love or just compassion.
Yeah.
And I do think that the compassion is really the key for them, because it's hard being a college student, generally being broke and trying to create a future for yourself. And so being supportive and compassionate is kind of my preference for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember those days. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I remember back, you know, that, you know, those are the times that you what am I going to do when I get out of here? And you have that, the struggle of, you know, lines of study and all that kind of stuff. But, okay, I was just curious, you know, because, you know, it seems that, you know, there are still, I mean, it's getting better, I think, that, you know, some academic institutions are recognizing, you know, the value of some type of intuitive awareness, you know, when it comes time to that part of life. But I think we can probably go, you know, a little bit stronger that way. But anyway, I was just curious about that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as far as the actions, steps, and tools, you know, these are things that you include in your book to help people leave suffering behind. So I would love it if you would share, first of all, you know, why is it that you put these in there, and maybe just an example, maybe of like an action, just maybe an example of each of these, or, you know, whatever that you would want to share. Okay.
Okay. Well, most of them are things that I found worked in my life, and a few of them I found, I worked in drug treatment because I'm a licensed substance abuse counselor. And when I worked at the treatment center is when I noticed some things, like how powerful nature is as a tool for some people. That I remember there was a young man about 18, just gotten out of high school. He was required to be in drug treatment. And I took the whole group one day and for a graduation ceremony for one of the women, and we climbed a mountain nearby and had our little ceremony on top of the mountain. And he said that was the first natural high he'd ever had. And he roared up that mountain, and he climbed it before any of us. The rest of us were huffing and puffing to get up there. And he had this epiphany of, oh, this is what you're talking about, that I can, with my body and with nature, have these natural highs and be euphoric about life for the first time. So that was, and for different people, it's different. For a lot of people, it's just fishing, being out there fishing, and they get that inner peace. For other people, it's walking in nature There is even walking meditation, which is an amazing thing to me that people can do both. I tend to do sitting meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So nature was one. Looking to other people and asking questions. People who have the kind of inner life or outer life that you want, ask them about that. How'd they get there? What is it about them that made that possible? I think anybody can be our teachers. That we can have physical teachers. I think children can be our teachers. I think we have angels and guides and masters who are available to us as teachers. I already mentioned two of the tools, the journaling and autobiography. I also just think that a spiritual practice, whatever that means for the person, whether it's being in nature, whether it's meditating like I do or chanting, whether it's going to church and the rituals in church, for some people really do something special for them. Mm. So any kind of spiritual practice, as long as it feeds your soul and you know in your inner self that you are better because of it, then do that forever.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those nature folks. I love taking, you know, photos of nature. I do my little every morning my walk in nature and see what kind of picture I can grab and share with everyone. You know, it's just one of those things for me. Mm. You know, that really works. And you know, and you know, when it comes to, you know, you mentioned, you know, church, you know, I used to have such an aversion to church and ritual, you know, I mean, yeah. I was raised, it was probably because I was an altar boy and I had to learn the Mass in Latin, and what the hell am I learning in Latin for? Nobody speaks Latin, mm-hmm. I don't even know what I was saying, you know, mm-hmm. and but you know, I've really come to appreciate the fact that a ritual, you know, especially done with others, generates an energy of that connectedness, you know, mm-hmm. and for some people who may have difficulty doing that on their own, it provides the perfect step-by-step process to achieve that.
Right, and you know, that is a good example of how different things really work for different people. So if ritual is not your thing, then find what is, because there's got to be your own path. And I do think having our own path, those of us who study other people but go our own way, that's probably one of the most challenging. But I love it. I love the independence. The study and research was pretty huge for me. I told you about the studying the law of cause and effect. Since mm-hmm. I studied Theta Healing, I understand that there are a large number of laws, like millions, that are the foundation of how our universe exists. So the law of magnetism, the law of gravity, the law of cause and effect, and so on. It's fascinating to study those and understand life on a more complex level. I mean, that explains also why sometimes we can't change things just with intention. Sometimes we want to create a change and we don't know why it's not happening, and so that might help explain it. I think
mm-hmm.
another tool.
I was just going to interrupt. Yeah, you know that. You know the law of attraction and why we don't sometimes, you know, attract what it is that we're seeking to attract. And you know, one of my favorite chapters in the last book I did was that old Garth Brooks song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers. You know what I mean? It's just one of those times where, you know, you just, you know, there are certain times when, you know, if your prayers go unanswered, there may be a very good reason for that to happen.
Boy, that is so true. That's a good point. Yep. And you can't understand why until you have hindsight and look back and go, oh, isn't that perfect? Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. Like in that song, it's, you know, he didn't get his high school sweetheart, but you know, later on he got this perfect wife and perfect perfect children, you know, for him, you know, and it was like, you know, that was exactly mm-hmm. the way that it should have worked out. So, but you know, those are the things that I think that, you know, time will actually teach us or show us, you know, exactly, you know, why our life took the path that it did. But also, it's I think as we're going through it, it can still be really difficult to to rise above, you know, not become enmeshed into the energy and the emotion and the dynamic of it.
Oh, I think it is really difficult. I think that's why we write books and do classes to help each other with it all. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think there's an attitude of, it's funny because, there's like two sides to this coin. On one hand, I say question everything. The things that you were raised with, if they don't fit anymore, question that and find what does fit. On the other hand, in life, I think it's really helpful when we are willing, when we are malleable, and we let the new good stuff in. So when I say question everything, I don't mean reject everything. I mean question it and determine, is it really for you? And then find that piece of surrender, of letting go. Because if I think that I have to be a 5 foot 11 inch blonde, whatever, to be happy in life, I'm up a creek. But if I open my mind and allow myself to be exactly who I am, then I can have happiness right here, right now. So that surrendering to the power greater than yourself, being willing to change, to grow, to expand, to let go of an old belief, all of that moves us forward. And I think in moving forward, we can have happiness or peace or whatever that is that you know, the listener in particular is looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, when you wrote this book, who did you have in mind that the reader that would be most helped by reading your book?
A number of people. The seeker might. The person with PTSD or depression might. A person who's has an eating disorder, or some of the other things. The group in a dysfunctional family. The person who's asking why. Why in the world is it this way? So really quite a few people. It could be just what they're looking for. One more tool along the way anyway.
Exactly. Well, and that's the key, I think, is that, what you did is you took your life experience and your journey and you kind of laid it out there. You presented to the reader the things that you learned along the way, the tools that helped along the way, and gave it to them to pick and choose. Add whatever tool to your tool chest that works for you.
Yep, nothing's black and white. In fact, at the back of the book is a list of things to try, and acknowledging the fact that if you're depressed, it's hard to do much of anything. So doing one thing a day to change your life is plenty. Just do one. So there's a checkoff list of things to try. Of course, you don't have to do it in order. And then there's a film list, and there is a book list, just of ones that pertain to what I talk about. And, they're not end-all, be-all lists, but they may make a difference.
Yeah. For example, I was just about ready to go there with that. The checkoff list. A couple of things you had in there just to let people know: pray, meditate, expect a miracle, take up a new habit, talk to people. I mean, so they're pretty basic things, but I think the idea of actually doing one and checking it off for some people, it really helps to demonstrate that they're doing something to improve their life, and I think that's one way of just, here it is. This is what I'm going to do today. This is my intention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And isn't it that saying on the recovery programs about doing the same thing over and over and over and over and expecting a better result? But that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So try something different.
Yeah, and I loved your recommended film. You had some films there. Some of my favorites, What Dreams May Come. I just love that one with Robin Williams. That one, to me, that one really kind of, even though it was, for some people, a very odd movie, to me it really represented, you know, what we recreate our past, our beyond life experience, whatever that experience is going to be. So.
Well, and that film was fraught with all kinds of things. It had a symbology of the Akashic Records in it. It had scenes that gave me the creeps. I was like, oh my God, I wonder what that symbolizes. And other ones where, you know, about the tragedy of not coping with the losses in life.
Yeah, it did, very much so. But, well, gosh, we're down to the last few minutes here, Lynn, so this has really been great. Now, is there any, maybe any final words that you may want to pass on to the listeners that maybe we didn't cover that you'd really want them to know?
Two things. One is I see every single person who's listening in today as a shining being of light, and that it's only a little adjustment to open up and to recognize that they themselves are the light that they are seeking. They already have it, and I want them to know that. And the other thing, besides that this book is available on Amazon and through my websites and et cetera, that I have another book coming out around summer, maybe by June, called The Mystery of My Unfolding Self, and it's about having a unique, undefined spiritual path, and it's just meant to be another tool because we can't all be Yogananda, and, you know, I don't relate as an American woman to Buddha or Jesus, although I love them, but, you know, so it's nice to have some examples of what is a spiritual life from just an ordinary person, and so I invite people to watch for that.
Well, listen, keep me in mind when it comes out. I would love to have a chat about that, you know.
Okay, I will.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. And Lynn, you are on social media as well?
I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter, yes. And, what's that other one? The one that's more for businesses. Yes.
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, thank you. Yeah, and I'm on Pinterest.
We're pretty much on the same ones. I got them on my website too. So yeah, so all listeners out there, if you use any of those social media platforms, join Lynn and me there and follow our journey. So thank you, Lynn, for your time today. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed our chat a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You're a gem.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Lynn Cockrum Murphy, and we've been speaking about her book, Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is lynncockrum-murphy.com, or her other website, which is desertjewel.org. And again, I do have links to both of those in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.